Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is an update on the situation in Pakistan, and since my last report, unfortunately things have started to get a lot worse.
Tens of millions of people in Pakistan were left without electricity on Monday, the power ministry said. It's the second reported major breakdown of the national grid there during the last 3 months. Factories, hospitals and schools across the country had no power for hours. It came after a voltage fluctuation in the grid occurred in southern Sindh province, according to the country's power minister. Traffic lights and computer screens went dark in Pakistan's commercial capital, Karachi. This was the scene at the Pakistan Stock Exchange. Outages were also reported in the capital, Islamabad. And in Peshawar in the north, some of the city's 2.3 million residents said they were unable to get drinking water because the pumps were powered by electricity. Commuters were left stranded at this metro station in the eastern city of Lahore. The sorry state of Pakistan's power sector is emblematic of an economy that's lurched from one International Monetary Fund bailout to the next.
So as you've just seen, Pakistan is now experiencing major power outages across the whole of the country. And this is really a reflection of the fact that they've run out of cash because they're having to import large amounts of oil, natural gas and coal in order to fuel the country. And because they don't have any cash reserves, they're no longer able to make those payments. So in today's video, I'll have a look in a bit more detail as to why this power cut occurred. We'll then have a look at the infrastructure of the power supplies in Pakistan and what the challenges facing the country are. We'll then go on to have a look at the population pyramid. If you've been following the channel, you know that recently we've looked at the population pyramid for a variety of different countries. And this gives us a really good feel as to what's happening with regards to the size of the population and then the breakdown in terms of the demographics, because that's important from an economic point of view and also the pressure that's being applied onto the economy. I'll then go on to give you an update on the economic side of things, what's happening with regards to inflation, the balance of trade, the current account, where we are with regards to the debt and how the IMF bailout discussions are progressing. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think is likely to happen in Pakistan over the course of the next 3 to 6 months and what the impact of this is going to be on the global economy. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters. So if you don't have time to watch everything, you can pick and choose what you'd like to see. And if you would like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon, YouTube Super Thanks and YouTube Membership. And as always, I'd like to say thank you so much to everybody that has supported the channel. Genuinely appreciate it. At around 7 a.m. on Monday the 23rd of January, Pakistan suffered a major catastrophic power failure that affected the vast majority of the country. Power was out in all major centres, including the biggest city, Karachi, and the capital, Islamabad. The huge blackout, which came at a time when some of the country is struggling through a harsh winter, was blamed by the country's energy minister on a surge that knocked out the network. However, it's been reported that the electricity was deliberately switched off during the night in order to conserve fuel, and the system failed when the technicians tried to turn the system back on at dawn. Now, this power failure is actually the second time in the last few months that Pakistan has experienced such a wide-scale failure of the system. And as a result of the ongoing financial crisis, the system is now severely underinvested and the infrastructure needs updating. Now, obviously, the loss of electricity is inconvenient for a lot of individuals, but it's absolutely critical for the industry of Pakistan. Over 20% of Pakistan's GDP comes directly from industry, and there is a large manufacturing base in the country. And when you have a loss in power like this, obviously, it results in downtime because all of those factories have to close whilst they've got no power. But it also causes knock-on problems because for a lot of businesses, if you lose power and have to shut down, you then have to restart all of your systems from scratch. So, for example, if you're operating a kiln or a furnace or something that needs to be heated constantly, once that heat is lost, it takes a long period of time to get it back up to operating level. And often you'll have to go through a safety procedure to let it cool down fully before you can start it up again. So there are really big knock-on implications for industry. And the industry minister has estimated that the recent loss of power will result in around 70 million of lost production. But actually, the real impact will be considerably more than that because of all of these knock-on implications. So why is Pakistan resorting to switching off its electricity at night and then experiencing these problems trying to restart it? Well, the obvious answer to that is money. They don't have enough cash to be able to buy in all of the energy resources that they need to produce electricity. So let's have a look at the breakdown of how electricity is produced and what other energy is used in Pakistan. This chart shows the breakdown of electricity production in Pakistan by power source, and it's split into 8 different categories. The red section at the bottom here is coal, the pink section is gas, the blue section is hydro, the green section is nuclear, this dark blue section is wind, red section is solar, orange-pink section is oil, and then at the top we've got bioenergy. So firstly, what you can see from this chart is that between 2000 and 2021, there has been a huge increase in electricity production in Pakistan. In 2000, the country produced around 60 terawatt hours, and by the end of 2021, total production was around 150 terawatt hours. So that's an increase of around 2.5 times over the last 2 decades. And if we now look at the breakdown of that electricity production, you can see the biggest single energy source is gas, which is used to produce around 37% of all electricity, followed by hydro, which is coming in around 26%, coal represents around 12%, oil 11%, nuclear 10%, wind 2%, and bioenergy and solar around 1% each. And this breakdown really highlights the problem for Pakistan, because the majority of all of the energy that's being used to produce electricity is coming from natural gas, coal, and oil, all of which are having to be imported, and the cost of which have increased dramatically over the course of 2022. Following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, we saw a huge spike in the price of all of those materials. That has come off a little over the last few months, but even after the reduction over the last few months, the current price is significantly higher than the long-term average. And if we now look at this chart, which shows total energy consumption in Pakistan, so not just electricity, this relates to energy that's used by industry for heating and cooking. Now, this chart actually dates back to 1965, so covers a period of 56 years. And you can see that over that period, there's been a huge increase in energy usage in Pakistan. And you can see that over the last 20 years, there's been a significant increase in the usage of gas and oil, and also in relative terms, coal. And if we look at the relative percentages here, you can see that energy usage in Pakistan is dominated by gas, oil, and coal. Gas represented around 42% of all energy used in 2021, oil represented around 27%, and coal 17%. So these three fossil fuels equated to 86% of all energy used in Pakistan. And once again, this highlights the problem, because Pakistan is having to import all of these energy products, and that's one of the reasons why it's running a negative balance of trade. This chart shows the current population pyramid for Pakistan. Now, if you haven't seen these charts before, we've got a scale on the left-hand side here, which is split down into different age categories, 0 to 4, 5 to 9, 10 to 14, and so on, all the way up to 100 plus. And then we've got two different colour codings. We've got blue on the left, which represents the male population, and pink on the right, which represents the female population. Now, what you can see from this chart is there is a pronounced pyramid shape. So that means that the largest single age group is the one at the bottom, which is 0 to 4. The second largest is 5 to 9. Third largest is 10 to 14. So what this indicates is that there's a high birth rate in Pakistan. They're producing more children than there are adults, relatively, and so the population is expanding. And if we look at this chart, it shows the movement in the population in Pakistan dating back to 1950. So if we look at where we are at the moment, there has been a rapid increase in the population numbers. Back in 1950, the population of Pakistan was around 38 million. It's currently around 225 million. But if you look at the projection here, it's projected to continue rising rapidly over the course of the next 50 years. By 2030, the population is estimated to be 274 million. By 2040, it's expected to increase to 332 million. By 2050, it will be up to 368 million. By 2060, 408 million. By 2070, 440 million. And by 2080, 464 million people. Now, Pakistan is currently the 5th largest country in the world by population, but is only the 33rd largest country in terms of land mass. And that means that it has a high density of population. And this is one of the problems that Pakistan is facing, is that it doesn't have enough natural resources. It's not a large enough country to be able to have enough oil and gas and coal and other commodities that countries want to buy. And therefore, one of its main attributes is its people and its manufacturing. However, it's not producing enough GDP to be able to pay for the rapid growth that's being experienced in population. So what we can summarize from this population pyramid, a and the forecast growth in the number of people in Pakistan is that the country is still developing and it's still growing. That means that it's got an increasing burden in terms of all of the people who are below working age are not contributing to the economy, and so they're needing to be supported. And the problem the country has right now is that it's not producing enough GDP to be able to pay for all of the essential infrastructure, such as education, the electricity system, all of the things that you need to support the fabric of society to support this growing number of people. And this is one of the reasons why Pakistan needs ongoing support and aid from institutions like the IMF. This chart shows the balance of trade, so the difference between the cost of all of the imports and the money being received from all of the exports for Pakistan. So basically similar to your checking account, if you're spending more than you're earning, then you'll be running an overdraft. If you're earning more than you're spending, then you'll be building up a nice cash balance. And the scale on this chart starts at negative 200 billion Pakistani rupees and goes down to 1.2 trillion Pakistani rupees. And as a point of reference, around 230 Pakistani rupees equates to one US dollar. So in US dollar terms, we're roughly looking at a scale ranging between negative 1 billion and 5 billion. And what this chart shows is that in every single year in the past 5 years, Pakistan has run a negative balance of trade. And over the course of the last 2 years, that negative balance of trade has been getting significantly worse. So basically in every single month, Pakistan is spending more than it's earning. And obviously that's not a sustainable position because at some point your reserves run out. And that's the point that we've got very close to right now. And if we look at what's happened over the last 12 months, we've now got an update on the position for December. And you can see that, not surprisingly, December came in with another negative set of results. So Pakistan is rapidly running out of cash. And this chart shows Pakistan's current account, which is basically the bank balance for Pakistan. And this further emphasizes the problem because you can see that Pakistan is running a negative position on its current account. In terms of inflation, this chart shows what's been going on over the course of the last 5 years. Now, I think what's interesting about this chart is that it looks different to those that we've seen for more developed countries. For countries like the USA, the UK, Australia, Canada, we saw a big increase in prices during 2021. As those countries came out of lockdown and there was a huge surge in demand for everything, that drove up prices. So we saw prices starting to get towards double-digit inflation in the second half of 2021. And that trend then continued into 2022 following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. If you look at what's happened in Pakistan, there wasn't a big surge in 2021. So we didn't see a big increase in demand from consumers, predominantly because a lot of people in Pakistan are not affluent. So they didn't have the same consumer behavior that we've seen in the West, where people wanted to go out for meals and buy consumer goods and all of those sort of things. However, what you can see is a rapid increase in inflation from around 6% during 2021 to the current levels of around 15% as a direct result of the increase in all of the commodity prices. So this was the increases in oil prices, natural gas prices, coal prices, and food prices, because Pakistan is importing all of those items. And as the prices went up in the international markets, Pakistan just had to keep buying. And this chart shows the movement in food inflation, which is a really important measure in Pakistan because a lot of people are below the breadline, so they don't have a lot of money. They're spending the vast majority of their income, if not all of their income, on food. And when the price of food rises, that causes a major problem for the poorest members of society. And if you look at what's happened to food inflation, it's followed a very similar pattern to what we just saw for general inflation. However, the levels are significantly higher. The cost of food is currently rising at around 35% on an annualized basis, which is more than double the general rate of inflation. And that is a major problem for a lot of people because they simply don't have any savings or any capacity to pay more for food. So therefore, they're having to buy less food with the same amount of money. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to provide you with an update as to what's happening in Pakistan, because I posted a video recently talking about the fact that they had less than 3 weeks worth of cash left to be able to keep buying all the essential resources. And the nationwide power cut that was experienced recently is a direct result of this. The authorities in Pakistan are trying to conserve and make the most of the existing resources that they've got. And by switching off electricity at night, they thought that they would be able to stretch things out to be able to make it go further. But unfortunately, with things like electricity generation, if you switch off all of your supply, it can be very difficult to reinstate it. I've talked about this a lot with regards to oil and gas in respect of Russia. It's not easy to be able to just switch these things on and off. It's not just like going and switching your kettle on. These things take time to actually get back up and running. And what Pakistan have experienced is that they had a major technical difficulty and therefore were not able to reinstate that power supply. And of course, that has a major knock-on impact to all of the people and the industry within Pakistan. And Pakistan needs its industry to be working 24/7 at the moment to try to get GDP up, to try to get some of the income up, to try to then be able to pay for more energy to keep the lights on. So this quickly becomes a vicious circle, because if you cut off the power, all of your factories go dark, so they can't operate. Therefore, they can't pay anybody, so nobody's getting paid their wages. They can't sell anything, so they're not getting any of the income for that lost downtime. And so that puts even more pressure on all of these companies. And of course, all of these businesses are operating in the international market. They're competing with other low labor economies. So if they can't keep up their production and meet all of their delivery targets, then they run the risk of losing contracts, of losing business, and then potentially putting even more pressure on the Pakistani economy. And as we've seen from the data in today's video, Pakistan is entirely dependent on the import of energy products to produce electricity, but also for heating, cooking, and industrial purposes. It's got more than an 80% reliance on oil, gas, and coal. So it's still predominantly using those three fossil fuels, and it's having to import the vast majority of that. And it simply doesn't have enough money to keep that arrangement going. Now, over the course of the last 20 years, Pakistan has tried to build some hydroelectricity production and nuclear in conjunction with some investment that's come from China, but it's simply not enough. And also the problem it has with hydro is it can be a bit erratic in terms of the actual delivery of that energy. So it still needs those fossil fuel plants to make sure that there's constant supplies, even though there hasn't been constant supplies over the course of the last week or so, obviously. And as Pakistan runs a negative balance of trade, it's very difficult to be able to work out how it's going to generate enough money to keep paying for those supplies, other than to ask for more bailouts, for more loans. But the problem with more loans is that it puts more debt onto the country. As I reported in a recent video, Pakistan now has around 62 trillion Pakistani rupees worth of debt. And it's having to service that debt. It's having to find money to pay for the interest to keep those debts current. So the more debt you take on, the more interest you build up, and it becomes another vicious circle, very difficult to get out of. And the other factor that we looked at in today's video was the population pyramid. Pakistan is a relatively small country compared to its current population. It ranks number 5 in the world in population and number 33 in terms of its landmass. And what we saw from the data that we looked at earlier is that the population is growing and is forecast to continue growing rapidly over the course of the next 50 years. So that's going to put even more pressure on the country, because you're going to have more dependents, more under 18s who aren't actually generating any GDP. And as that population keeps growing, there'll be increasing demand for electricity and other forms of energy. So that's going to put a further burden onto the budget for Pakistan. They're going to have to buy in more of those fuels, and so it goes on. So hopefully from this analysis, you're getting a feel as to the current problem in Pakistan and why it's so difficult to be able to solve it. Because Pakistan is simply not generating enough income to be able to pay for everything it needs to buy in, and therefore it's having to borrow. But the more you borrow, the more you get into debt, and so it goes on. Now, in terms of how are they going to get themselves out of this situation? Well, over the course of the last 10 years, Pakistan has become very close to China. It's actually the biggest recipient of the Belt and Road Initiative investments. China's invested into a myriad of infrastructure, including power stations, roads, airports, ports. But the problem that Pakistan has is that all of that investment has been done by way of loans. So this is once again further building up the loan burden for Pakistan. And at some point, China may decide that they want to negotiate on the terms of those loans. And as you may have seen from some of the videos that I posted, Sri Lanka had a similar arrangement with China. They were unable to service some debt on a port in Hambantota. And as a result of that, they ended up signing a lease to China for 99 years. So China now effectively owns that port in Sri Lanka, and there are concerns about whether or not China could build a military base there. So it is possible that a similar sort of arrangement could occur with Pakistan, that China decides that rather than taking repayments, that it would like to take ownership of some of the land and maybe some of the infrastructure. And then that throws up a whole political question as to what the implications of that would be for countries such as India, which are located very close to Pakistan. And also, let's not forget that Pakistan is a nuclear power. It has its own nuclear weapons. And so there's obviously a risk in terms of, if it does end up having to hand some assets over to China, will the nuclear weapons be included in those negotiations? So lots of food for thought here. And once again, there are major implications in terms of the global economy as to what's happening in Pakistan, because somebody needs to bail them out. We can't just sit by and watch Pakistan go down in flames. Somebody will need to provide some money in order to provide that fuel and food to keep the country going. The IMF is currently in discussions with regards to a bailout loan, but they are becoming long and protracted, and they're not really getting anywhere because Pakistan can't meet all of the terms and conditions that the IMF want them to introduce in terms of taxes and changes to the rules and regulations. So there's a big question mark as to whether that's going to happen. So it looks more likely that somebody else is going to have to come in and bail Pakistan out. Who that is remains to be seen, and I will keep you posted on any further news and developments as soon as they happen. Hopefully you found today's episode useful, interesting, and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, then please give me a thumbs up, and thank you so much for watching this video all the way through to the end.